I deserve good things. I am entitled to my share of happiness. I refuse to beat myself up. I am an attractive person. I am fun to be with.
Daily Affirmation with Stuart Smalley. Stuart Smalley is a caring nurturer, a member of several 12-step programs, but not a licensed therapist.
I'm going to do a terrific show today, and I'm going to help people because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Daily Affirmations with Stuart Smalley mocked the self-help industry, but there have been numerous studies affirming a wide array of benefits of both self-affirmations and words of encouragement from others. Casey Klein isn't a self-help guru, but he is thinking about ways to make life in the contact center better for agents. Among those ideas is using data to intervene and provide encouragement when agents have emotionally difficult calls. This week on Next in Queue, we discuss why contact centers experience staffing challenges, the pros and cons of virtual agents, the pros and cons of real-time guidance and agent scripting, robotic process automation, AI's role in contact centers going forward, and innovative ways to improve employee experience. Let's get to it.
Welcome to Next in Queue, the podcast for contact center and customer experience professionals. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy To, your service team's personal coach, giving them the process, resources, and insights to deliver the perfect customer experience over the phone. Learn more at HAPPITU.com. Now, here's your host, Rob Dwyer.
Thanks, everyone, for joining another episode of Next in Queue. Rob Dwyer here today, and with me, joining me, Casey Klein. Casey, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you doing? Happy to be here.
I am fantastic. So, Casey, for those who are not familiar with you, before we get into our topic today, tell me kind of your background. Where are you coming from? How did you get into this business?
Well, I think I got into the business the same way most people are into contact center, accidentally. So yeah, I mean, little boys and girls in school aren't like, I want to be a firefighter, I want to be a doctor, I want to work in contact center. So I was in college for finance, and I ran into an older friend of mine who had just graduated, and he was having a lot of trouble. He had the same area of focus that I had, and he was having trouble finding a job. So he was trying to basically take a job as a bank teller or something. I was like, I don't want to do that after college. So I tried to jump on with a finance firm early, and I ended up grabbing a job for a mortgage company, but I could only get a job in IT for them. And then I got traded around like I was a basketball or a football player a couple of times, and I wound up in the telecommunications group. And little did I know that I was going to end up, you know, managing a very large contact center solution before I was even old enough to drink, which I would not recommend to anyone. So I kind of just fell into it, honestly. I think that's how most people do.
Yeah, it really is amazing how many people find somehow the contact center and turn it into a career. And I think you really hit on something, that you can get into this at a really young age and you can move through the ranks really quickly in the contact center if you've got the right skills and you want to do something. it's a great industry to do that in, because you're working with tech, you're working with people, and there are so many different avenues that you can find yourself going in, whether you want to do some kind of analysis and or go into workforce management or go into quality or go into training, operations. Like, there are so many different things.
Yeah, it's the thing I talk about most of the time whenever I'm trying to like train people, like go to train a sales staff on what is contact center, what's customer experience. Like, everyone has experience with it because everyone's a consumer, everyone's a citizen, right? So it's just apply what you would like to it, and that'll help drive a lot of sort of things in that. And if you do that and you combine that with like a technical acumen, like our company, where we focus on being sort of technologists and the adoption of technology in order to provide customer experience. So it allows you to go, as you said, a bunch of different ways. You know, maybe you're into data science, maybe you're into, like, you know, cybersecurity, maybe you're into a bunch of different fields, AI, you know, you can go so many different directions and still be relevant in the industry. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, what we're going to talk about today, I think, is something that most contact centers today are grappling with. And some are meeting the challenge more successfully than others, but there are a lot that are still trying to figure it out. And that's how we deal with understaffing, how we deal with attrition, how we deal with meeting the needs of our company, whether we're an in-source company or an outsource company. Customers expect someone to be there to answer the chat or respond to an email or answer the phone or talk to them on Twitter or whatever channel they're engaging with a brand with. And I think most of the people in the business recognize that that's become harder and harder. So before we dive into some of the solutions, can we take a step back and talk about what are some of the reasons that you think we've seen some of these challenges in the industry when it comes to staffing?
Oh, wow. I mean, what am I going to say? I mean, it's a terrible job. I'll be honest. I was reading like a research from Yale, I think, like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, that was talking about call centers outsourcing to like women's prisons. Talk about, you're having such a shortage of getting people that want to work in a call center, so much so that you're literally taking a captive audience and forcing them to do this. I think there's some moral ramifications of that I'm not really prepared to delve into, but it's always been a problem. I mean, think about it. There was a Forbes article I read recently. I think it was like, thank you for not calling or something like that. It was funny. If you're in the industry, it was very funny. And there was a quote inside of it that said, well, it was like some large percentage of citizens, consumers, admit to either cussing or yelling at call center agents or contact center agents. And then it said, and the others are just lying about it. And so it stuck with me. So it was very funny, but it's also true. I mean, in this age, everybody is fighting over customer experience. So you're trying to, you know, the customer's always right. And it was like, so there becomes an entitlement, I think, with consumers in general, in which, you know, the rise of the internet and everything, people stop seeing people as, you know, humans. And yeah, they're like, you're here to make me feel good about using your organization or company, and I can treat you as disposable. And that's, I mean, it's a sad truth of the reality. But you look at that combined with, I mean, what we saw through the pandemic, right? I'm not going to get crazy political, but there's more prime age working or people choosing not to work right now. So I think you're right to start off there, because I think the first thing in all of this is you have to realize that you know, you have a problem if you're going to fix the problem, right? And you have to look at things different and realize, like, this is not a glamour position. This is not something people want to do necessarily, working in a call center, you know, potentially dealing with irate customers all day, especially in customer service. And it can be very taxing on a person emotionally, mentally, but even just, I mean, even think about it from a, like we were talking about data mining before, think about it from the metrics and the KPIs we use. It's like, on the call, get off the call, average handle time, average speed of answer. How many calls do you handle in your SLA? Like things like that. It's really driving this workforce really, really hard. And that job's getting harder. And, you know, if you have a choice, do you want to be frontline taking calls every day? Probably not. So that's really where it's going. That's why it's such a problem.
You know, it reminds me, and maybe I'm a glutton for punishment, but it reminds me of something that I spent almost 20 years doing outside of my regular job, and that was being a baseball umpire. Okay. And that it's a really important job. And most of us, if we're sports fans and we're being honest with ourselves, we have looked at an official in whatever sport you like to watch and slung some arrows in their direction, right? Whether it's at the TV or you're actually at a live event and yelling about what an awful call something was, right? It's a really hard job that is made more difficult by the people who are telling you that you're not doing a very good job at.
Yeah.
Right. The people that you're kind of doing it for, like, they're just never satisfied. And I feel like it's really hard to find officials in all sports because mainly because of the parents, particularly at the younger levels, when you're starting out, they can be challenging to work with. And you're also not very good yet when you first get started. So you're starting with an audience, if you will, who's watching your every move, who doesn't think you're very good. And you're also not very skilled yet because you haven't done it very long. We do the same thing in call centers and contact centers. We bring in agents and we provide whatever onboarding. And there are some companies that do an amazing job and other companies that just want to get you on the phone as fast as can. And there are probably a lot that are somewhere in the middle of that. And you're subjected day one when you are interacting with customers, potentially with people who are upset, who are angry, who are taking things personally. And it's really hard to retain people if that's their first experience, is just all of that negativity. Can be really hard to say, yeah, I want to come back and do this again tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's one of those, I think it's one of those industries or one of those careers where it's, you know, if you do it well, good, you did your job. But if it's not up to a certain standard, then you're terrible. There's no, you exceeded. You did better than expected. It's always, you either did your job or you did terrible. And then the pressures we're putting on call center agents, I think today, as technology is rising, is harder than it has ever been to be in that industry at all.
You're absolutely right. And we're going to talk about some solutions, and technology fits in there, but it's a double-edged sword, right? Yeah. I mean, technology can help deal with some of the problems that we're experiencing as an industry in having enough people, but it can also exacerbate the stresses that the agents have, because when you think about what an agent deals with from a technology standpoint today versus maybe when you and I got into the contact center, it's night and day difference between what agents have to balance. So let's get into some solutions, shall we? Let's start with one solution. Not my favorite, but it's out there and it's getting better, and that's virtual agent. Tell us a little bit about what a virtual agent is and how that helps alleviate some of the challenges we've got.
Well, virtual agents are, I think the same way that you think about them. They're not my favorite thing. We want to be honest, it's sort of a rebranding of things, just to, you know, put a new name on something that we've been doing for a really long time. So it's just, it's sort of self-service with natural language processing. That's really what it is. But I think the industry right now is treating it, like, I don't know if you ever heard the analogy of like SlimFast. SlimFast, used to be all about, you know, drink this shake for lunch or breakfast and then you'll lose weight. And then when people got really into physical fitness, it's like drink this shake for lunch or breakfast and it'll help you put on weight. They're now protein.
Yeah.
So I feel like IVR or virtual agents is sort of the same thing, but it's obviously growing, growing steam, or it's picking up steam. It's especially with ChatGPT, like throwing out buzzwords and things like that. Just everybody wants to talk about it, right? Large language models with generative AI and conversational AI, and the space is so complex and convoluted at this point. I saw a poster the other day for an event in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and it is unbelievable. It is unbelievable how many different vendors and how everybody's playing in the space. So really what it is it's the same thing it's always been, right? It's a little different nowadays because back when you and I probably first started, everybody would just talk about Nuance, right? And Nuance did all the speech recognition if you wanted something that. But nowadays, everything gets converted into uses transcription, and then we do analysis on all this unstructured data of text back and forth. But it's opened up the ability to do a lot of really cool things, like program intents. Like when somebody says something, instead of it just keying off a word or a small phrase, you can now key off of various words or phrases or combinations of words. And a lot of these solutions have the ability to learn. Now, a virtual agent is supposed to be, in and of itself, a technology where you are speaking to it as if it is an agent using conversational AI or natural language processing that's answering all your questions as if it was a real person. The problem that comes into it is to get it to that point, takes a lot of oversight and a lot of programming. It's the same thing with like sort of ChatGPT. If you just randomly go ask ChatGPT a question, you got no idea if it's going to be the right answer or the wrong answer. It is just what it can find. So it's sort of the same. You're sort of limited to that. I struggle with some of the industry because a lot of people put AI and machine learning, and for AI, they really just mean I can have a higher or lower confidence factor with identifying words. And machine learning is really like, well, I can log every time I don't know what to do with something and then ask a human to come and tell me what to do. But in there are some real people using real, you know, generative AI, real machine learning and real things in there. But for the most part, it's just trying to do containment or deflection. Back in the day were terms that we used a lot of. It's trying to service a call without it having to get to a human. That's really what it is at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the biggest difference for me with a virtual agent versus an IVR, which both essentially can serve the same purpose, right? Interactive voice response, for those who are not familiar with IVR, is the thing that really you're probably pressing zero every time you get to it, but it can understand your responses, right? So the IVR that says, say the last four digits of your social security number, or you can type them in, right? That's an IVR. It's listening. But a virtual agent can sound a lot more conversational and almost like a real human. There are some products out there that are, let's just say, a little creepy in how much they sound like a real human.
Yes, true. True.
But so you're right. There's to make it really good and to understand, to have the right guardrails in place, it takes a lot of effort to make a virtual agent work really well.
It's very interesting when you get into the conversational aspect of it, the natural language processing. You know, if you move away from the press or say one, press or say two thing, which is kind of the directed dialogue world, and you get into sort of the natural language processing, it's all about, again, how much you can put into it. How much do you have? How big is your knowledge base? How well defined is it? You know, because if it's not good, it's not going to be good. And you can tune it to every to recognize more and more different dialects or accents and things like that. But if your knowledge base just isn't good, it's never going to get that good. Right. Unfortunately, that's just how that's going to go. But they are getting better all the time. The things that run in my office all the time that I accidentally say, and then they start beeping at me and I run on my phone constantly. They are getting better. It's just taking a very, very long time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, understanding context is, yeah, right. That's the gold standard, is to be able to derive context at every point, because we as humans use context in our communication all the time. And it's understood, typically it's understood by whomever we're communicating with. Sometimes they miss the context, but that's just a natural part of how we communicate. It's not a natural part of just a data structure, which is essentially what we're doing, right? We're taking language, we're turning it into data, trying to understand it, and then trying to respond in a way that makes sense in conversation, which, by the way, language is always evolving as well. So it's just another, let's just throw that curveball on top of.
Yeah, I was finding it really, really interesting the other day. I was talking to somebody that was talking about just the gamer industry. And so the gamer industry, because these elite competitive gamers are from all over the world playing the same game, that there's been a lot of effort put into translating real time, like between these, because there's millions and millions of dollars in this. Yeah. But somebody in the US playing with somebody in, say, Brazil, and somebody in Japan, you know, things like that. And they don't speak the same language, but they need to be able to communicate for teamwork. And it has to be real time, because milliseconds are how they measure everything in gaming. Yeah. Your response time. And then when you think about that, I don't know if you follow any of the gamers online and you're just listening to their jargon, right? The lexicon for them is so ridiculous. Like, everything is shortened, and there's always, you know, like tech W and things like that, that I don't understand that they're all saying. And it's, but you have to know that in order to be able, and that there is no translation for that stuff. So it's really cool how technology is being used to sort of bridge that gap there. It's interesting.
As someone who has used one device to view another device and translate Russian inside a game, I get that need, like, use some very archaic method. And I say archaic, like it's super incredible technology. But compared to real-time translation, it's pretty archaic. So yeah, absolutely. All right. Speaking of real time, let's talk about real time guidance. How can real time guidance help alleviate these issues with understaffing or attrition in a contact center?
Well, I think you said it kind of earlier, like it was part of your point. Like, when you first start out, you're not very good. You don't know what to say, right? If you're in a contact center, you don't know necessarily everything. You don't have years of handling all sorts of different customer issues. So that's really what real-time guidance or real-time scripting or agent scripting, rather, that's what that can really give you. You can do that with like a supervisor, with a human, or you can do that, you know, AI driven. you know, a lot of times most companies, I will say, use a human for like QA purposes. Somebody listens in, and either you have what's called Whisper or even Barge, you know, things like that, where you can jump in and keep people from making mistakes, make sure that people do compliance-based announcements if they have to do that, like things like that, that are pretty typical. But what's really cool and interesting is being able to use AI to do that, right? Is to be like, hey, here's an upsell opportunity, or hey, they're talking about this here from our FAQ is a typical answer for this, even if it's something the person hasn't dealt with before. It can drive up standards in general, but really what it does is it sort of lowers training time, right? Mm-hmm. Your agents get better faster. So that's really the value that I think it brings in this sort of climate right now. I mean, I think there's always value for, you know, compliance stuff and things like that, where it's like, you have to do this on this call. Seen a lot of products where they like check off things as you go through and do them to make sure you've done however many things have to be done on a call. But in general, I think we're talking about there's not very many people. When you get a hold of those people, you got to make sure they're good. And we just talked about virtual agents that are getting better all the time. So when you get to an agent, the expectations on that agent are way higher. Mm-hmm. So you need a solution there helping them along the way with, how do I answer this question? I don't want to have to put somebody on hold and go call a supervisor because I don't know how to handle this if it's a standard thing. So, but I, in general, that's where I think the real value is today.
Yeah. I remember the first time that I took a phone call in my second go round in the contact center. My first go round was actually in outbound credit card sales when I was in college. It didn't last very long, but that had a script, although it was paper, like you flipped through it like a Rolodex almost. But it, that was really helpful, right? If someone objected to your offer, you had a way to, you know, have a rebuttal to that. But my second go around, I remember I was working for supporting a large telecom, right? And sometimes people would just call in for questions, but like my very first day on the phones and my very first call specifically, I think it was a relatively easy thing to deal with, but it's almost like you just freeze. And that very first call, I've seen it throughout, you know, my years of being in the training side of things, that people really freak out that first day. It's nerve wracking to be put on the spot and have to talk to customers, even though at the end of the day, it's just a conversation between two people, and you probably know as much as they do, if not more, based off of all the things that we've gone through in training. But that's not how it feels. And so having something there to kind of prompt you and help move the conversation forward so that you don't just go blank, that can be a really helpful thing.
Yeah, quintessential deer in the headlights.
Right? Yeah, like, absolutely.
Just they want a question. It may be something that you know and you know by heart, and you're just like, you know, and then you're trying to get through it. Yeah, it's like I said, it's not easy. It is not. It's not fun.
No. All right, so let's talk about another kind of thing that can help us. And this is probably a little bit more behind the scenes, but let's talk about robotic process automation. And first, like, what is that? And then let's talk about like some real world examples of what we mean.
So robotic process automation is this theory of having sort of attended or unattended bots, however you say it, they're in program, that basically helps you do mundane and repetitive tasks, you know, things that you can program it to do. I mean, they go as far as you can like record somebody at a desktop doing a function on the desktop and then create a button. So you hit the button and it does that. So you only have to click once where you would have to click 15 times or 20 times. So It's honestly, it's something that's, you know, very, I wouldn't say early on, but it's definitely picking up steam in the hype curve. Like it is, people are like, we can use this for everything, but it is very, very valuable. I mean, whether you're in the contact center or outside of the contact center, it's so relevant in contact center in general, because you think with all these technologies, you got to prove out an ROI. You don't go and build a solution or build a platform or a bot framework and build all this for something that you do 4 or 5 times a day. Like in the contact center, you're potentially taking millions of calls a day and doing the same task over and over and over and over and over again. So your return on investment becomes very, very fast because you're doing it, but because you're doing so many, the frequency is so great. But a real world example, and I did this for a drug diagnostic company several years ago. I went out to meet with them, and I just lived through the life of an agent for a day. And that agent was, they would get, at the time they were receiving faxes. So they would receive a fax and they route it like a task, and they'd be handling this. And they would literally have to go between 32 different screens, and all across multiple different applications in order to do everything that needed to happen. So you can imagine the errors that happen in that, like, oh, I forgot to do step 18 out of 32, you know, like that sort of thing was really high. And then, you know, data would forget to, or wouldn't get put in, or, you know, it would take them a very long time to actually service any of these sort of faxes. So imagine being able to sit down and have a bot that basically says, do you want to import this record or something, ingest this fax? And you say yes, and then that bot would go and do all of that for you. And so you can focus, like if it was a call, right? You could focus on who you were talking on the phone with and being empathetic to them, as opposed to here, hold while I click through 15 different, you know, like, so really that's in a nutshell what it provides, right? There's a bunch of different ways to actually do it. And I mean, the thought of robotic process automation, again, isn't necessarily a new one in the world of contact center, right? We've admitted we've had a problem with having contact center agents for a really long time. That's why self-service had become so popular. What is self-service? It's robotic process automation. That's really what it is at the end of the day. There's just other companies that do it.
One of the things that I know that it really helps with, and you alluded to this, is it reduces the cognitive load on the agent, because I don't have to remember that I need to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to be prompted to do X, Y, and Z, or X, Y, and Z is just going to be done for me because I've selected R.
Yeah.
And then those things just happen in the background for me, and I don't have to remember to do those things. But that makes me want to circle back to what we were talking about with real-time guidance. And I wonder, have you seen, or do you worry about, an increase of cognitive load when we're providing a certain things, like you mentioned that checklist?
Yeah.
When we're kind of throwing additional information out at an agent while they're dealing with a customer over here, and then we've got something that's saying, hey, make sure you do this and make sure you do that. Is there a risk that we're actually increasing the cognitive load under the guise of making something easier for them?
Oh yeah, 100%. And you sort of beat me to it. And that's what I was going to say with RPA. It seems to be one of the things that actually really does reduce it. Some of the other stuff just adds to it, just adds pressure to it. Like like a lot of companies, we have a big event every year. Everybody flies into Orlando. We're in a convention hall. And last year, our company, Presidio, we had a female fighter pilot that came in and talked to the whole company, and she went through what it was like with the like the jet taking off or being in a dogfight, and it was like it was trying to process like 10 things at once. And it's like, I'm keeping an eye on this person. I'm reporting my altitude. I'm checking this. I'm checking my G's. I'm, you know, like, and they're doing all these things all at once. And I was like, well, think about that in the context. Like we talked about real-time guidance from the standpoint of like helping people know what to say or like how to respond. But we were talking earlier about transcription being a big key. So what are the big things that they can generate from that? Well, from transcription, you can see frequency of words and you can see what people are saying. And we haven't really talked about sentiment analysis, but that can be there. So you're a call center agent, right? You're taking a call. You have someone potentially yelling and cussing at you. You're bouncing between 15 different applications on your desktop while your desktop is telling you you're talking too fast. Speed up. Just stop the crosstalk. They're upset. You know, like say this to them, do that. Like, it's like being a fighter pilot.
Yeah.
It is. And like you can add so much to an agent that it's mentally exhausting. I'll liken it to a day in my life, right? Typically, you know, we run like three different business messaging apps and we're on, you know, all sorts of different communication devices, like I'm on now and my laptop, and I'll be on a call and I'll be getting messages all in my business message app that say, hey, you need to go to this, or can I get help with this? And I'm trying to keep up and I'm not even having people yelling and cussing at me. So I can only I imagine, and I say imagine, I've lived that world, and I can imagine, like I'm sure you have, and it's not always fun, and it really is sort of takes a superhuman sort of will to sort of put up with it day in and day out for a very long time. That's why I've been making a joke for years that if you work in contact center long enough, you age in dog years.
Yeah. So, and but, you don't get a cool flight jacket. You don't get nice aviators.
Yeah,
like,
nobody's
not perks of the job.
Nobody's playing Highway to the Danger Zone when you walk into the call center. You know, so
maybe that should be in our solution, right? Maybe everybody gets to work in nice aviators. We blast some Kenny Loggins as soon as you start your shift, just to you know, make you feel
and then better. They like the end of Top Gun where they're like tearing the people out on their shoulders. Yeah, we should do the whole thing.
I think you and I are onto something here.
There's a winning strategy here. You want to get people back into the call center? This is how we get it done.
You know, that actually leads me to, in seriousness, it leads me to kind of the last thing that I want to talk about in how we address some of the challenges with really the whole industry, because the industry is about the people, right? We talk about technology all the time.
Yeah.
And more technology is taking over certain aspects of the job. But in my opinion, the reality is that people will still be a core piece of contact centers for a very long time, because customers want to talk to real people when they get to a certain point in a journey where they have a certain kind of problem, whatever the case may be. How do we actually do a better job lightening the load on agents and getting them excited? How do we change the narrative from what you talked about earlier, which I think is a very common thing that we think about in the contact center, like nobody dreams of working in the contact center.
Yeah.
How do we make it a job that people do go, yeah, I like it. I love it. I like going to work every day.
Yeah. Well, I think there's a lot that we can do. And to your point about getting away from humans, I don't think we're ever going to really, really get to that point. And I'll be honest, I think there's things. We talked about the gaming industry, right? There's a reason why gamers, competitive gamers, tend to be very, very young, right? There are physiological changes that sort of happen as a person grows, and I'm seeing it now that I'm on this side of 40 myself, but everybody sees it, you know, and there's one thing that sort of you can always trust, which is you can always follow the money. And the people with the most disposable income are the people tend to be older people. Older people tend to favor boys. Because I don't think that's going to change. All the studies say, you know, like Gen X prefers this, millennials prefer this, you know, Gen Z prefers this, the baby boomers prefer this. No, it's just an age, right? I'm not multitasking 15 things like I used to in my early 20s. Right. Like it's not happening anymore. And I can be honest with myself about that, but knowing myself is a very, very difficult thing. So one of the things that I think is probably a very, very important thing is I've actually seen this, and I've helped some manufacturers that reached out to like analyze some companies that are focusing strictly on how do you make life for an agent better? And, you know, everything in the contact center is so data driven, so KPI driven. So, you know, you need to handle this many calls. But there's this growing sort of sentiment. And I think you're hitting the nail on the head, the sort of total experience ethos that's out there. Like if you really want to drive brand loyalty that everybody wants to do, you have to focus on two major populations. You can't just focus on the customer experience. You need to focus on your employee experience as well. And if your employees show up and they go through this, then they're going to be like, oh, I hate this place, man. And, you know, but if you can make life for them better, then that's it. So this industry that I was talking about has popped up. They do a lot of, so they route tasks to agents, but the tasks aren't deal with a hostile customer. The task may be a breathing exercise, or it could be a meditation, or a mindfulness exercise, or some sort of game if that's what you're into as a short little break. Or it could just be like a nature scene. You know, for 30 minutes listening to a babbling brook or birds or something, you know, and at least the people in this industry are claiming that by doing that, they are driving up employee satisfaction tremendously, but they're actually seeing that people are being more, more efficient off of it. They're really moving towards more, they're having higher customer satisfaction because people are happy, you know, or I won't say happy, but they're at least not super angry. They're not just expecting to get yelled at nonstop. They're handling that better. Their tone is better, things like that. And that's leading to overall more profitability for the companies that are implementing it. And that's somewhere that I'm sort of passionate about. I will say more than anything I fell into contact center. Well, I stayed in contact center, and maybe I'll tell you in the future. There's a long story. I always say that a can of Hormel chili, a suicide hotline, and Chick-fil-A is the only reason I still work in contact center. And there are stories behind it, but well, maybe that'll be for another time. But
yeah, that sounds like an offline conversation. Honestly, but
no, it's really not that bad. I got into the industry because I liked helping people, and early on, I found that the suicide hotline thing is I helped build a suicide hotline in Daytona Beach. And that was very rewarding to me as a person, right? And being able to help them. And then I got into, you know, helping engineers and helping project managers and helping, you know, solution architects and things like helping them build careers. And I got into that, and again, got into helping customers more directly. Recently, because it's such a like fulfillment requirement for me, it's more about helping agents. Like I can help a lot more people if I focus on making the life of an agent a little bit easier. you know, and things like that, and having family members that do that, it becomes much more, it hits home with me a little bit more than most things, because it's like here, I mean, what are you doing? I'm not just on this blue rock floating in infinite expanding nothingness for no reason. I actually want to make an impact on people's lives, not just my own. So
yeah. No, that's great, Casey. You know, when you were talking about some of these strategies of routing really activities, non-customer facing activities to agents, it just makes me think that if we create opportunities for our agents to, whether it's to get past a difficult conversation or just an opportunity to kind of mentally reset, right? We've been at work for X many minutes or hours, and just having that opportunity to kind of reset so that next interaction we enter with an improved, hopefully a really good mindset, the more often we're going to see good interactions and good outcomes for that. And I think the more that we drive our agents to be in the best, like facilitate them to be in the best mood that they can be in, and yeah, and to focus on the conversation, the better they can drive good customer outcomes, and the less you're going to have people calling back or coming back through a chat upset about something, right? When we do a good job the first time around, which does require some focus and a good attitude, the less often we're going to have upset customers coming back at us, because it's not the number one reason, but a big driver of dealing with upset customers is peers who didn't do a really great job the first time that they came around. And so now I'm stuck dealing with a customer because you didn't set good expectations, or because you didn't actually complete something that you said you would complete, or, you know, I gave out some incorrect information, whatever that case may be. The more that we can correct that and do it right the first time with a smile, yeah, the less abuse customers are going to dole out, and the better everyone can feel while they're actually doing their job in a contact center.
Yeah. And I mean, think about that. Even if you couple it with like sentiment analysis and everything that we can do, like how powerful could it be for an agent if in the middle of getting yelled at, it got an automated word of encouragement? Like, yeah, this is your fault. You know, yeah, like that's through this. You're doing a good job. You know, things like that when people are yelling at them. I think it's like Truth. It's like a cigarette or a vaping quitting organization or whatnot. You can text them like, hey, I'm having a craving, and they're just going to send you like encouraging, you can get through this, like just automated. But imagine doing that when you don't even have to tell them, like they just know you're having a craving because they're watching you or something. Yeah, that sounds a little big brother and a little creepy, but at the same time, but if you're in the contact center and you're having a difficult call, like words of encouragement can go forever. You know, yeah. We had a saying in this company that a pat on the back is the ultimate in cost effectiveness. Like telling somebody that they're doing that, or even using that same data that we now have, because this is such a great age in contact center, because we've been so stagnant for so long. It's like, hey, we can finally really do some stuff. Like having the ability to say, okay, that was a bad call. Let me give you a 60-second break. Not on a timer, not because you've been here 2 hours, you know, more of, hey, that was a tough one.
Yeah.
We do that in almost everything in life, right? We do that in organized sports. We do that in, you know, like just doing chores around the house. Okay, I'm tired, I'm taking a breather. You know, like it's a natural thing, but we don't do that for call center agents who are the face of your brand. Like, yeah, you want to drive brand loyalty? have really, you know, good, solid people taking your frontline calls and doing, as you said, resolving issues the first time with a good attitude.
Easy.
Try to do as much as you can.
You're good enough. You're smart enough. And gosh darn it, people like you.
Oh, that's the nicest thing I've heard today.
Casey, it has been my pleasure to talk with you today. I really enjoyed our conversation. I can't thank you enough for joining Next in Queue.
No, thank you. I was happy to do it, and anytime, I enjoyed it as well.
So. Next in Queue is brought to you by Happy2 and is produced by me, Rob Dwyer. If you enjoy this podcast, please, by all means, subscribe and or rate this podcast in iTunes or your favorite podcast app. But more importantly, please tell just one person about this podcast. Word of mouth is the best way for people to discover new content. As always, thanks for listening.